This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Sailing the Canadian Maritimes aboard the National Geographic Explorer. A local educator got to do that last month, and she'll join us later in the show to talk about her experiences. But first, the Cincinnati Preservation Association is celebrating its 50th anniversary. The organization's original mission to save Native American and early settlement sites has evolved to saving individual buildings and reviving entire neighborhoods. Paul Muller, principal of Muller Architects and executive director of the Cincinnati Preservation Association. Also, Kevin Wright, executive director of Walnut Hills Redevelopment Corporation. And economist Donovan Ripkema, principal at Place Economics, a real estate and economic development consulting firm, are here to discuss using data-driven tools for neighborhood planning and revitalization and discovering the untapped value of historic buildings. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And thanks, everybody, for being here this afternoon.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks a lot.
Paul, the Cincinnati Preservation Association got its start in 1964, and the aim was preserving archaeological resources. And was the first issue the organization, didn't it have something to do with Shawnee Lookout, I believe?
Yeah, Mark, it did. It was actually kind of early in the entire history of preservation movements in the country. We weren't first, but in 1964, that was actually 2 years before the National Preservation Act, some power transmission lines threatened some very important archaeological resources, and that group organized. What we found out this year, sort of looking at our history, they immediately turned their attention, though, to the city, to they got the Lytle Park Historic District established in the very first year.
Now, 50 years ago, too, the association was actually called, what, the Miami Purchase Association for Historic Preservation?
Yeah, it was a name that came from the two Miami rivers, the Ohio River and the Purchase, that happened in the 1790s of the entire region.
And was the name change that occurred in the early 90s, was that to reflect the broader scope of the group's mission?
Yes, there's a lot of confusion with the name. Historians and people within the field knew it, but there's been a general outward movement of preservation from people who were sort of specialized in the field that saw something really important to the general population. And so the name change to Cincinnati Preservation Association was part of that.
What are some of the major accomplishments, Paul, that the group has made in its history?
I think the biggest one is Cincinnati's local historic district ordinances. They're very strong. We have about 28 local historic districts, and those provide actual protection for historic structures. Another thing that I think we're particularly proud of is the way the sense of Cincinnati's historic buildings feeds into the identity of the region. That's an educational mission. And I'd say in the past few years, we've actually seen a real transformation of the region's identity.
And also, the Cincinnati Preservation Association is a steward, right, of a number of different historic buildings in the area.
Yes, we own the John Houck House on Dayton Street, the Powell Crosley Jr. House, or estate, actually. It's an 18-acre estate in Mount Airy. Mercy Hospital gave that to us a few years ago, and we now operate it as a wedding and business meeting center.
Okay. The association commissioned a study of Walnut Hills that was conducted during the summer. And what was the purpose of that study, Paul? And why Walnut Hills? And maybe Kevin can jump in on this as well.
Sure. Well, we wanted to help be part of this transition of preservation into not a specialized field, but something that is making our cities stronger, more useful, just taking care of the things we have and finding the economic value that was in them. So we commissioned Donovan Ripkema and his team at Place Economics to come and bring a new tool, and Donovan can talk about that much better than I can. But this was to sort of end our 50th year anniversary with a connection to neighborhoods. And Kevin, if you want to film.
Well, Walnut Hills has a wonderful history, in particular, People's Corner Business District, which is the intersection of McMullen and Gilbert, used to be the second most thriving business district in the region. This was before I-71 was built, before the suburbs were built, was known as the city's second downtown. So it has a lot of large buildings, large structures, and I think the Cincinnati Preservation Association was attracted to kind of the work we're doing in the corridor. About 3 years ago, we recreated the Walnut Hills Redevelopment Foundation with more of a place-based approach and a focus in particular on the commercial corridor. And so we've used public dollars and private dollars to purchase several historic buildings. We've rehabbed one already and about to start construction on the rehabilitation of three more. And our theory is the one thing that Walnut Hills is lacking in is walkability, and that if we can revitalize the commercial corridor and make it a walkable, safe business district again, that will have an impact on housing, and we have a lot of historic homes. You know, I think the ReLocal project is really helping us further that effort to see where we should focus in housing, where we should focus on preservation outside of the business district, and how our work in the business district is going to affect that.
Donovan, there was some interesting technology used in conducting this study, starting with volunteers who used a smartphone app to survey every real estate parcel in Walnut Hills. And how much of this study utilized technology, and how much of this was good old-fashioned legwork?
Well, a good question, and some of both. I mean, if you the study has really three components, and one is kind of the big data side of things. It takes tap census data and property tax data and things like crime reports and voter registration and floodplain and slope areas. They're big data things, generally accessible either online or, in the case of Cincinnati, some from great cooperation from city agencies. And that was part of it. And that's, you know, technologically driven in that we get it from, you know, internet sources and others. The second, though, the really cool part was the field survey that we did with volunteers, surveyed every parcel in Walnut Hills. And that is a smartphone app. And you stand, you get yourself positioned on the GPS, and the city's plat map is overlaid over the Google Earth, so you can identify you know, exactly where you are. And then we had a short survey about each of those parcels based on that and that app. And then the third element was really to get community input to see if we should change our weighting for certain variables. And that also was technological in that it was an online survey, although with a lot of hard outreach on the part of Kevin's organization, Paul's organizations, and others to get people to respond to the survey.
Donovan, does today's technology lead to being able to gather not just more data but better data for studies like this?
It really does. And what this is, it's especially on the field survey, that's the really kind of cool, interesting one, is it's not a substitute of the way that a National Register district would be surveyed, where there's, you know, intricate detail on every property. But what it does is give a kind of a windshield view of patterns. And so you can look at these maps and see where the graffiti is. You can look at the map and see where the good sidewalks are. You can look at the map and, based on community input stuff, see where senior housing ought to go, either on infill housing or redeveloping existing buildings. And so it's not so much it makes decisions. It is just there's more information upon which good decisions can be made.
So the data is actually that specific: graffiti, sidewalk conditions, all that kind of thing.
Absolutely. We looked, and what's interesting with this technology, we averaged, I think in the end, we counted about, there were about 2,700 parcels, but we in fact surveyed more than that because kind of conflict in the city's parcel records and some parcels had been merged and so forth. I think the volunteers looked at about 36, entered survey data on about 3,600 parcels, every parcel in Walnut Hills. And again, it wasn't everything, but they were asked, the first question was, is there a building on the site? And the answer is yes or no. And then if the answer is yes, then there was questions about the quality of the building, the condition of the building, is it vacant or occupied, what's the character of the building? And then some quick questions about, is there public art, is there a public space, what's the condition of the sidewalks? So relatively few numbers of questions, so it could be done relatively quickly and yet gather a huge amount of useful information.
Kevin, how important was it to get that community input? How big a role did that play in this whole study?
Oh, it was extremely important. And many of our residents are not online. So we did partner with Paul's organization and Donovan's organization to get out there, get some feet on the ground, get in the community, get people filling it out. It's extremely important. And Donovan, in his presentation last week, talked about where that survey matches up with the data, and we found it fascinating. I think one other thing that Donovan and I haven't even talked about, but is interesting is that our organization did 5 community listening sessions this summer where we went out into the community and we held events and we just listened to people's concerns about the community and where they wanted it to head and where they think it's heading. And they talked, there were similar results to Donovan's community survey in the sense that people said they wanted walkability. This was a community that historically has been walkable with opportunities within the business district and less blighted homes and things of that nature. And across the board, young, old, lifelong resident, new resident, that seemed to be what we heard the most was less blighted properties and the ability to walk over to the CVS, the ability to walk to the Kroger, to the bank and feel safe. And the historic fabric of the neighborhood is such a critical component to that. When you demolish buildings without a plan, that doesn't help with walkability and safety. And so that doesn't mean you don't do any demolition, but it means that you have to be strategic about it.
Yeah. And one of the things that Donovan did at the Fall Forum, we had about 300 people at the Hall of Mirrors on Friday. Everyone was paying attention. Even the sound man said, I was supposed to leave, but I want to hear the rest of this. Donovan, you had the room. But he connected it to large trends that are happening throughout the United States. And it turns out Walnut Hills has many of the ingredients that these demographic trends are pointed towards.
Right. And just hit on that again, too, because this is something else Donovan and I didn't get a chance to talk about. But in his presentation, he referenced a ULI survey that I actually reference when I do presentations about our work in Walnut Hills and what is valued among millennials and baby boomers. And it's proximity to shops, so walkability, proximity to public transit, proximity to jobs, and diversity. Now, we have all of those things in Walnut Hills with the exception of true walkability. So that really drives our mission every day is to rehab the business district and bring that back to life so that then we have great location. We have historic preservation, a diversity of buildings, a diversity of people, proximity to public transportation. So, you know, it was interesting that Donovan used that same trend that we use when we were talking about our work.
Donovan, sounds like this study that was done wasn't just about the condition of buildings. This was an overall quality of life kind of survey, wasn't it?
It really was. And that's, I think, really important is we created this ReLocal tool. And I'll be perfectly candid. We're, you know, my firm is mostly involved in the economics of historic preservation. And so we're a pro historic preservation. But out of our 75 or 78 variables, only 4 or 5 or 6 have anything to do with historic preservation. They are very much quality of life measures. And the phrase that Kevin used earlier, about kind of how his organization's strategy being a place-based strategy, that's really what ReLocal is looking for, is what are the characteristics of the place that make it appropriate for use A or use B or for opportunities, you know, to do X or to do Y. And so, yeah, maybe of all the variables measured, I mean, maybe out of 75, maybe 5 or 6 are based on preservation and another dozen based on buildings. But the rest of things are things like what's the rate of voter participation? Where are the third places in the neighborhood where people like to gather? And then on the community survey, what's important? What is important to you in a neighborhood? And one of the stunning things for me was this community survey wasn't intended like a survey you do for a political election. It was just to see if on a kind of sub-neighborhood area, one to another, was there particular variables that were important to the residents of that particular area that would say we should change the weighting on some variables that we're using because we don't want to do it kind of without community input. In the end, we made no changing to our weighting. Why? Because across the whole Walnut Hills, which is very different demographically, ethnically, educationally, rates of home ownership, race, income levels, huge differences within the neighborhood, and yet there was an extraordinary consistency of what's important to the people there.
We'll take a short break, and you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests this afternoon are Kevin Wright, Executive Director of Walnut Hills Redevelopment Corporation, Paul Muller with the Cincinnati Preservation Association, and economist Donovan Ripkema as we discuss neighborhood planning and revitalization and discovering the untapped value of historic buildings. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with William in East Walnut Hills. Good afternoon, William. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. As a resident of East Walnut Hills, I'm wondering what your organization's, how you were involved in the redevelopment of the schoolhouse lofts, and more recently, which was the old Walnut Hills High School, and even more recently, the old firehouse that is now Fireside Pizza, which is great pizza, by the way.
Well, I'm assuming that is directed at me.
We'll take it that way. Go ahead, Kevin.
We did have a role in the schoolhouse lofts. I wasn't around, so maybe Paul actually can speak to some details around that. Now he's shaking his head. No. Now.
Well, go ahead, though. I was just thinking of the firehouse.
But I can certainly speak to the firehouse. Firehouse Company 16 on East McMillan recently opened as a restaurant, Fireside Pizza, and is doing extremely well. That was one of the buildings I mentioned earlier that we were able to purchase and save. And the process there looked was a long one. We purchased it. We actually stabilized it using some neighborhood revitalization dollars. And then we marketed it to redevelopment, and we found an investor and a developer who developed the space. And now it's an apartment above and a restaurant below. And, you know, to bring this back to the conversation we've been having, I mean, we take a very focused approach building by building in the business district. That's our strategy right now. And we don't just look at the physical structure, but we look at the place. And that's what I meant by place-based earlier, is what is happening on that corner that is holding it back from being a place that people choose to travel to as opposed to traveling through. And so when we were looking at developing the firehouse, we focused on safety and the physical infrastructure and parking, and we had events there. We did placemaking activities. We did marketing. And underlying all that was a community engagement strategy that we hope is paying off, because ultimately you can't have a place without people. But preservation is a big part of it.
Yeah. And I'd like to add a little bit about the firehouse. That's a Harry Hake fire station. They did all of the really great ones around town. And Kevin said it took a long time, decades. That save really was at least 10 years and maybe more. And the lesson in it is that historic preservation sometimes takes a very, very long time, but it's worth it. And we, you know, working with people like Ed Cunningham of the city of Cincinnati, the house next door was saved also. They had to actually cancel a demolition contract on that building. Mm-hmm. So that's a great success story for Cincinnati.
Right. Just to further that, to give you a sense of the condition it was in, the roof was caved in. The second floor was caved in. There was a hole in the side of the building where a car had hit it when we started on that project. And so, you know, yes, we could have torn it down, but what kind of place would we have had then without that building?
Let's talk with Jennifer in Avondale. Good afternoon, Jennifer. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi. Very interesting that you were just discussing a fire station.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
Property that I am currently discussing as well. It was not actually operated as a fire station, but that was what it was constructed for. And it's been a family property for between 40 and 50 years and operated as an auto body shop in Avondale. And since that time, it's been rented out, and my mother needs to sell the building, so we're currently trying to put together a marketing strategy and also work with the tenants to vacate the premises. And I'm just trying to seek some direction in which I can kind of find the right buyer for this property. It does need some rebuilding and some blood, sweat, and tears to go into it to kind of revitalize it. But it's a great structure.
Jennifer, firehouses are great structures for adaptive reuse. If you give us a call, we can give you direction to a lot of ways these have been done. Donovan may have some ideas on that too, but they're generally not too large. So a lot of different uses can go into them.
Jennifer, thank you very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. Paul, what were the key findings that came out of this study of Walnut Hills?
Well, I think Donovan presented them to this audience the other day, and he'd probably be in a better position to do that. But one of the overlying concepts that we heard, and it was really exciting, is that preservation shouldn't be a specific line item within a plan. It should be a tool that serves many of the goals that a city has across the board. And that's something we're really trying to work to incorporate into the way we work at CPA.
So, Donovan, what were some of the key findings? What were some of the key statistics that came out of this?
Well, one of the really interesting things, and it came from the community survey, was there's been some discussions around the country about the kind of parallelism of millennials and baby boomers, and their things that are important to them in neighborhoods. And out of about, I don't know, 40 or 45 variables in the community survey, 8 out of the top 10 for both the people between 20 and 35 and those 65 and older were the same answers. Hmm. So overwhelming. That's no statistical fluke. I mean, that's an extraordinary level of correlation. So that issue, and as Kevin mentioned earlier, a lot of that is around issues of walkability and proximity. The second thing is, in a neighborhood, you can look at a neighborhood and you can take a quick look at census data and say, oh, here's a neighborhood that there's no economic opportunity. Most of the households are poor and there's just no opportunity for economic advancement there. Well, that's just fundamentally absolutely untrue. There's something over $125 million a year spent by people living today in Walnut Hills. Well, that means that there's a great opportunity for the comeback of the commercial district that Kevin is very appropriately making their kind of primary early focus on, and it's how to tap that. Most of that money by the people in Walnut Hills is not being spent in Walnut Hills. And to the extent that that's that leakage out of the neighborhood, there's a real chance for economic recovery. The other thing that was really important, I think, to me, in looking at this neighborhood, was two issues were deemed by the community very important. And one of those was a diversity by income and by race. And a second was the high importance of home ownership, neither of which is particularly true in much of the neighborhood. Well, here are people who are living in neighborhoods that are not racially diverse. They're, with the exception of the Southeast, they're mostly kind of monolithic, and yet very important to across all of the segments of the neighborhood, that economic and racial diversity is part of the picture, and that home ownership is a priority. Both of those ought to be giving clues to, number one, that makes it a pretty cool place to live, and number two, for entities like the city, like the land bank, like housing entities, there ought to be ways to look at, do we have some home ownership opportunities here. The other thing I think that was stunning, and to think about some of the smaller scale housing in Walnut Hills, in the city of Cincinnati with 260,000 or so people, 57,000 people in Cincinnati are one person households. 57,000. And that means a great opportunity for infill construction, for small apartments, and for, small housing where you don't need a 3,500 square foot, 2.5-story house to live if you're one person. And that comes at both ends of the chronological spectrum. So I think all of those point to opportunity time in Walnut Hills.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. Let's talk with Mickey in Walnut Hills. Good afternoon, Mickey. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, Mark, and hello, Kevin. Thank you all for your incredible expansion of Walnut Hills. I've been a resident in East Walnut Hills as a white elder woman since 79 and without a car, and have walked and walked and walked, and so I am immersed in this neighborhood to CVS and Kroger right across from each other. Now, I used to call that area no man's land across the street. However, in the past year or so, the Kroger has just become, the last visit I took there was so amiable, so wonderful. And I saw many, many, many more white people in the management.
So, Mickey, are you concerned about maybe gentrification, perhaps? Okay.
Gentrification.
Okay, we kind of lost you there. Did Paul or Kevin, you want to address that?
Well, I'm going to hit on something Donovan said earlier about diversity in the neighborhood. So if you look at Walnut Hills neighborhood-wide, and Donovan, jump in any time here, but I think based on what I heard Donovan say in his presentation on Friday, if you look at the neighborhood as a whole, it's a pretty diverse neighborhood for everyday standards. But the neighborhood has different quadrants. And Donovan mentioned the Southeast quadrant, which has experienced a lot of growth because of Eden Park and other factors as well. One of our intents with the focus on McMillan is to create civic spaces and businesses and retail opportunities that can connect these different quadrants in a way that creates opportunities for existing residents, but also creates a way to stop that leakage that Donovan mentioned, and to create places where people can bump into each other and experience their neighborhood together. And I think that ties directly back to preservation, because preservation, you know, these buildings were created for people. They were created before the advent of cars. And so we have the infrastructure there for walkability. So I think as the neighborhood grows, I'm not exactly sure what the woman calling was asking about, but
I think her main concern was the gentrification she thought might be going on.
You know, Walnut Hills also has Donovan was measuring this drive for diversity in the neighborhood, but that has historic roots. You know, it goes all the way back to the Lane Seminary, where it was the only place in Cincinnati where African Americans could buy property for many years. And that culture has remained in the neighborhood. It's a real phenomenal asset. Mm-hmm.
And we've seen from the grocery stores, even in the worst of times, has been a place, you know, call these, I think there's a term going around now called bumpy places, where people bump into each other and they meet one another, even if they don't know each other beforehand. There's no better example of that than a grocery store. And our Kroger is a place where if you go in shopping, you're going to run into somebody from the community and spend too much time in the vegetable aisle talking to them. So it's, you know, it really is kind of like one of those third spaces that Donovan mentioned. And if we can create those third spaces, you know, the first space being your home, second place being your place of work, and then those third spaces in the community where you can connect with people maybe who are different than you and have those experiences. I mean, that's really important to the growth of Walnut Hills, at least from our perspective.
And Donovan, I think that was one of the things in your study showed, that a lot of people in Walnut Hills were long-term residents, right?
They were. In fact, 5% of the population there have been there over 35 years. So you have this core anchor, really, of very long-term residents that kind of, you know, lasted through the ups and downs and are committed to the neighborhood. The other thing, just jumping back a second, is we asked people in the community survey about where did they go in the neighborhood to see and meet other people, and the Kroger was one of the top places identified. So no surprise there, Kevin.
Paul, now that you have all this data, what's the next step? Where do we go from here?
Well, first of all, we're going to be getting the data to the Walnut Hills Redevelopment Foundation so they can plug this valuable tool into the work they're already doing. Secondly, we're going to continue our work with neighborhoods. I mean, recently the Land Bank created a historic building stabilization fund. What we're seeing is that preservation now has opportunities to integrate across the spectrum into areas where there are historic resources. And in Cincinnati, we have so many. I mean, we're really blessed with incredible history here. It's now part of our civic identity, and it's a fuel for our growth. So we just want to continue doing that.
Are there plans for doing similar studies in other Cincinnati neighborhoods?
A lot of public officials were in the hall the other day, and we're getting calls from them, and we're really looking forward to seeing if this can be expanded to not just in Cincinnati, but across the river. And then we're also having a party on November 8th.
Okay. We'll go ahead and tell us about that. Put your plug in now.
Thank you. Well, this is our 50th anniversary, and we wanted to go out in style. So November 8th at the Cincinnati Renaissance Hotel in the magnificent Daniel Burnham Banking Hall, we're going to have a party. People can call our office, or they can go to probably your website to get a link for us.
They sure can. They can go to WVXU.org and find that link. And Paul, the question that comes to mind as we talk about this is, why preservation as opposed to just tearing it down and putting up something new? I mean, are there a lot of economic benefits to preservation? Is there a lot of value in an untapped value in an old building?
I recognize you're asking at the end of the show, so it'll have to be quick. But absolutely. There's cultural value. There's environmental value. And as Donovan has made a career of showing people, there's enormous economic value.
Well, and it makes us unique. It makes communities like Walnut Hills unique to other places. So we have to save our history, because that's made us who we are.
Well, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Paul Muller is principal of Muller Architects and executive director of the Cincinnati Preservation Association. Kevin Wright is executive director of Walnut Hills Redevelopment Corporation. And economist Donovan Ripkema, principal at Place Economics, a real estate and economic development consulting firm. After the break, a local educator joins us to talk about her adventure on the National Geographic Explorer and what she's going to do now with all the amazing things that she learned on that trip. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.